Hey everyone, Tom Salemi here. Welcome back to Device Talks Weekly. Before we begin, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Confluent Medical. We'll be hearing from Confluent a few times in the episode today. Please make sure you enjoy those messages and check out confluentmedical.com. We are focusing this episode on Medtronic and on the FDA approval of Hugo. A little later in the podcast, I will be speaking with Rajit Kamal. He is the Vice President and General Manager of Robotic Surgical Technologies at Medtronic. And before that, Chris Newmarker, in an extended FOMO interview, spoke with James Porter, Dr. James Porter, who's the Chief Medical Officer of Robotic Surgical Technologies and Digital Technologies at Medtronic. So Chris talks with Dr. Porter about why Hugo, why is it different than the incumbent out there, and where they see the opportunities. And I'll speak with Rajit about the business side, about the plans to compete in this market, and a little insights on how he learned about the FDA approval. I enjoyed that conversation immensely and hope we can have Medtronic at an upcoming Device Talks event. Before that, of course, we'll have the Newmarker's Newsmakers. We've got a special guest here visiting to tell us about a new product, new report that's come out, being put out by our good friends at Mass Device. So make sure you listen to that and the Newsmakers, and enjoy this this sort of deep dive into Medtronic's Hugo RAS news. This is the penultimate, and I like saying that word, penultimate episode of Device Talks Weekly. We'll have one more on December 30th. That'll be our year-end wrap-up. So no episode next week, but again, we'll be back in full force on December 30th. And then we will not have one out on January 2nd, but we'll resume our Friday. Scheduling after that. So I guess that'd be January 9th. So lots of Device Talks coming your way, though. So please do enjoy all that's coming your way. And let's get this podcast started. I'm done talking. Let's go, people. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom, doing well. My gosh, I can't believe it. The year's almost over.
We're rounding up. Yeah, rounding up. This is the penultimate episode of Device Talks Week. We have one more after this, and it'll come out just before New Year's Eve. It'll be a roundup with the editorial team and a very special guest, Chris Newmarker. Should we reveal? No, I don't think we should. We should wait.
No.
Right? Yeah.
We'll keep that under wraps. But at, like with any good penultimate episode, you've got to have a good surprise for people. So this time around, we've got Gail Grimes with us today. Yes. Gail, it's so great to have you here on Device Talks Weekly.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And just to like fill everybody in here, Gail is a veteran industry analyst, 20 years covering the industry, based out of Orange County, California. And Gail and two of her colleagues have started producing just really in-depth analysis reports for Mass Device, our MedTech market intelligence reports that we are offering for purchase and download on Mass Device. We have available right now like a surgical robotics report that Gail wrote. Gail, 20 years writing these reports for, Informa and a number of other outfits. Our editorial team, we write reports, we have like really good, reported articles, we're doing some research, but my gosh, your reports, it just takes it to just a whole other level. I mean, this is a roughly 100-page report with like extremely large bibliographies. I mean, just give people just a quick rundown. I mean, if you like, purchase and download this report, I mean, what are they getting out of it? If they're reading through this report.
Yeah, like you said, it's a nearly 100-page report. We're forecasting the market 5 years out, so we're looking at sales in the U.S. compared to outside the U.S., breaking those down by leading companies, leading competitors in the market, creating a competitive analysis where we look at the estimated shares for each of the leading competitors and then forecast each of their sales out for the next 5 years. And then we have a chapter specifically dedicated to the leading products on the market right now and the emerging products. And we break those down by the clinical applications for each of the robotic surgery systems. And then we also, we start out with the clinical overview chapter where we look at the clinical applications for robotic surgery these days. We look at procedure numbers historically. We just give a deep dive into where the market is at today and what are the trends, what's going to be happening in the near-term future.
What a fascinating time to be looking 5 years ahead. I mean, between obviously Intuitive is growing, Hugo just got its approval. We're going to talk about CMR a little later. I mean, the market's just heating up, not only the number of players in existing surgical markets, but the rise of neurovascular robots and other areas that are being targeted. It's really, I think the next 5 years are going to be really pinnacle time for surgical robotics.
Just a little tease for our listeners. I mean, this report says that this multi-billion dollar market is going to double in size by the end of the decade. I mean, just fascinating. And then Gail, when you were starting to cover this market, I mean, Intuitive was like the big player, you know, the great pioneer that it started in the 90s. And now we just have like so much more. I mean, what has really struck you by how the surgical robotics market has, you know, changed in recent years?
Systems are getting more technologically advanced. We have AI, which is really a big helping with sales. Advanced visualization systems. Outcomes are improving. We have more studies showing the benefits of using these systems, how they save hospital staffing. They improve outcomes. We have lots more competitors in the market, of course, hundreds more competitors and branching out to different clinical applications, more FDA approval, international approvals of different clinical applications. Orthopedics and spine is taking off. So, yeah, it's been changing a lot, and we just expect it to continue getting better and better. There's a lot of room for growth in the market, a lot of market potential, untapped potential.
Yeah. And, you know, I see there's a lot of news releases we see over time, like saying, oh, this market is being forecast to grow, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, a lot of those, like, seem to me like it feels like somebody somewhere in the world, like, threw a dart at a wall or whatever. But I mean, what you're doing, I mean, I know what you and your colleagues, you know, Crystal Larson and Carrie Neptune have explained to me. I mean, it's way more sophisticated than that. I mean, you're really, like, you know, you have some, you know, some formulas that you're really putting together and looking at different variables to come up with these forecasts, right?
Yeah, we're looking at financial statements, the leading competitors. We're looking at growth drivers. We're looking at the statements from the company themselves saying what they expect their growth to be. We're looking at epidemiology, what clinical applications these systems are approved for. And what are the new product launches that are going to be happening in the next 5 years that are going to drive growth and affect competition among the leading competitors?
Yeah. So, I mean, I could really see, you know, the type of people who'd really, you know, want to, you know, purchase and download these types of reports. I could see like analysts and strategists, you know, at big med techs who, you know, want to, you know, get look at the work of somebody else who is experienced to, you know, double check what they're doing. I could also see investors and people who want to get involved more, you know, in the surgical robotics market who want to get some really good research to back them up before they, you know, go in and start making decisions. I mean, am I thinking about that right?
Yeah. Historically, we've had, a lot of interest. Clients of ours have included major medtech companies and also a lot of consultants who are trying to figure out the market for their clients, investors. So a multitude of different type of people, companies find these reports helpful in forecasting sales, looking at where the market's going to be in the next 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I'd really encourage our you know, some of our listeners here, hey, give these reports you know, a try. You know, I think you know, we're just really, you know, taking what we've offered at Mass Device to like a whole other level, and you know, I'm really you know, thinking we're providing another valuable service for you know, people in the industry, you know, who are looking to, you know, be informed as they continue to innovate. So, I mean, Gail, thanks again for this report. If people want to get some more highlights from the surgical robotics report, Gail's written a great article article on Mass Device, 12 things you need to know about the global surgical robotics market. So Google that up. And if you want to, actually go and, purchase and download the surgical robotics report or the CGM report or transcatheter heart valves report that we're offering on the site, just go to Mass Device's homepage, click on reports in the navigation bar at the top, and you'll be able to find out more. So Gail, thanks again for coming on Device Talks Weekly, and hope you have a happy holidays.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Tom. You too. Take care.
Well, Chris, it's great to be able to bring those reports to your Mass Device world, your Mass Device community.
Yeah, absolutely. And like looking to early this next year, we'll get Carrie Neptune on, the author of the transcatheter heart valves report. But yeah, it's really fantastic. Man, I'm living the dream. It's great to, be informing people in this great industry that's like doing really good work. So
absolutely, absolutely. All right, Chris Nemecker. Well, you're here with your purpose of delivering the new markers, newsmakers.
Yes, that is my purpose. That is my calling.
The big news of the week.
That's right. Here we go. New markers, newsmakers for the week.
Let's start at number five.
Hey, number five, robotic surgery, man. We got CMR Surgical winning FDA clearance for their next generation Versius Plus surgical robotic in a procedure that I'm wondering if I should try to pronounce. Ready? Cholecystectomy. No. Oh, no. Gosh.
Colectectomy.
Yes. All right. Thank you. All right. Yes. So that's... just really, really amazing news. I mean, we've got the competition is just heating up in surgical robotics here in the United States. And, it's neat to see a company like, out of the UK, CMR, coming in here with a next gen system. I mean, we just had the other week at SS Innovations, out of India. They've got offices in Fort Lauderdale as well, applying to get clearance for their own system. And yeah, now we got Medtronic competing against Intuitive. So,
yeah, what's interesting also. Versius has a very similar design as Hugo, kind of a modular sort of portable setup, independent consoles, not the giant massive console like Da Vinci has. And it's going to be – the timing is interesting with the approval of Hugo, which we'll be talking about extensively today in our interviews.
Yes.
CMR is looking to make some noise as well. So
yeah. Open console design as well with their system. So,
a lot of
Hugo comparisons to be made. But
and you'll talk with Dr. James Porter of Medtronic about the value of the open console system.
Absolutely, he had a lot of positive things to say about that, and it does. I can see how surgeons would like being able to have that higher level interaction. I mean, especially if they're used to working with the OR staff, firsthand in the operating room. It's, that open console design is something that they really value. And Dr. Porter definitely conveyed that to me when we were talking.
Yep, for sure. So, all right. Well, interesting news. The robot wars continue.
I love it. That sounds, sounds like a great series. I can't wait to see which. Can I stream that on Peacock, or is this like a Netflix thing?
I think that'll be a Sci-Fi Channel.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds about right. So, number four on the list, our senior editor Sean Hooley had a interview with the group chair of electrophysiology and neurovascular at Johnson & Johnson MedTech, and Michael Bodner. A lot of that. And a good chunk of that interview, was talking about the CMS decision that's opening up, to bring up, they added AFib treating ablation procedures, cardiac ablation procedures to their ASC covered procedure list. So a lot there about kind of like the expansion of MedTech into ambulatory surgery centers and what that means, for the industry. And it's just, this is a really growing theme for us. It's just kind of like a really exciting space for the industry to get into the ambulatory surgery space.
Yeah, we actually kicked off the year. We had our device talks. We had a webinar series around ASCs, and we talked about it extensively at Device Talks Boston. Now we're seeing this, and clearly, we've talked a lot about cardiac ablation, pulse field ablation in particular, and we also talked about Johnson & Johnson. We had Tim Schmidt at Device Talks West talking about the three big businesses that'll be leading J&J forward after they've spun out DePuy Synthes.
Yeah.
And cardiovascular is one of them. Of course, Shockwave and Abiomed are two big pieces of that. But electrophysiology is another really big part.
Absolutely.
Where so they see a lot of growth.
So if people want to find out more from J&J about this, they should go and check out Sean's article. Like a lot of really good good insights there. And number three on the list, we've got Olympus. They've launched a second MedTech investment fund. They had one a few years ago that was $50 million. Now the new round is $150 million. So just really going along with this theme that since Bob White took over as CEO this year at Olympus, the veteran Medtronic executive, you're just seeing Olympus is doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, a big commitment. Great to see the strategic step up. Of course, Abby Hunter-Syed, who is managing that on behalf of Olympus, will continue to do so, working with the Sarity Partners Ventures that Sean mentions in his story. The industry is looking to invest in gastrointestinal, urology.
Yeah.
And respiratory technology. So
yeah.
Olympus is being very precise with where they're going to put these commitments. So, but there's a lot happening in all three of those spaces. So we'll see where Olympus puts the capital.
Absolutely.
So good news for startups, good news for Olympus.
Yeah, absolutely. So in number two on the list, this is from MDO Managing Editor Jim Hammerhand, but he had a nice little scoop about a company called Nephrodite. Just got FDA breakthrough device designation for their Holly implantable continuous dialysis system. I mean, so they're looking at like an implantable artificial kidney, really, that they're developing. So, I mean, this just like sounds like if this all works out, it could be it sounds like a very transformative technology. And Jim has the news on Mass Device, and you can go to Medical Design Outsourcing to get more of a deep dive into the technology. Like Jim has a story: Nephrodite's implantable Holly dialysis system might free patients from kidney centers. I mean, just imagining like. Everything that goes into dialysis these days, I mean, all these dialysis centers that, people still go to. I mean, the U.S. has been trying to get more home dialysis. But, I mean, this, if it works out, this sounds like very disruptive in a positive way.
And Jim talked to Nephrodite co-founder and CEO Nikhil Shah. And he said in that article that we think at a minimum we're a bridge to transplant.
Wow.
So looking at sort of an LVAD sort of thing for kidneys,
yeah.
Which would be pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Absolutely needed. So we can keep patients on the transplant list, keep them healthy because we're a continuous device. We're acting differently than intermittent dialysis. I mean, I can't think of any other condition that is more not only disruptive to a life, but just destructive to a life of having to undergo dialysis several times a week. How do you function? How do you work? How do you take care of your kids and your family? I mean, so this is just an exciting piece of medtech. I agree with you 100%, Chris. Really great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the type of stuff that just gets me really excited, like, about what we do. Like when you hear somebody's working about it on this, and Nephrodite is based out of Atlanta. So yeah, we'll definitely keep following what's going on with them.
Have to see if we can get them at one of our device talks events happening in next spring. It'd be great to see what they're up to.
Absolutely, I think that would be awesome. And then number one on the list, we have a new giant publicly traded medtech company. I mean, Medline Industries IPO is done. $7 billion IPO. So, like our MedTech Big 100 list has them as the third largest medical device, companies in the world. So, really cool to see. Now we'll be following all the news with them, as they trade on the public markets now, on the NASDAQ under the symbol MDLN.
If you rank them by market cap, they would be roughly falling between Becton Dickinson and Edwards Life Sciences.
Wow.
The market cap's about $54 billion. Abbott number one with $215 billion. Intuitive number two. Boston Scientific, Stryker, Medtronic, and then BD and Edwards. So Medline's falling right dead center in the top 10.
So this IPO should deliver this IPO should deliver a pretty good return then for the private equity firms like Blackstone, Carlyle, and Hellman and Friedman that made big investments in them. And Forbes mentioned the Mills family that founded Medline. They could see their Forbes was saying their net worth could rise to at least $20 billion. So, wow.
I was thinking about Ray Cohen. We had him on at Device Talks West, but on the podcast last week, and he was talking about, as an entrepreneur, dilution is something you want to avoid. But at the end of the day, if you have a very small percentage of something that is sold for $3.7 billion, like Axonix was, it can be a life-changing event, as he said.
Yeah, right? So, my gosh.
I think the Mills family has had a life-changing event for sure.
Yeah, for sure. That's great.
You hinted at suspense at the start of the podcast. We've got some suspense for the Big 100 next year, I think, Chris. I mean, with Medtronic spin out and the spinner of DePuy Synthes and now Medline in there, it's like,
that's true. The DePuy Synthes spin out. Kind of like a new curveball
on the top
of
the list. Who knows?
We'll see what's going to happen. This is going to be pretty fun.
We were all ready to declare J&J MedTech the number one with the spin off of Minimed, but then they spun off DePuy and Medline's out there. Maybe they acquire a company over the next 12 months.
Anybody's
game.
This is
anybody's game.
I love it. This is exciting. Yeah,
we got us a horse race.
We've got a good old fashioned horse race. It's fantastic. Be awesome. So, that's great. It's great. We got a lot of excitement and a lot of stuff going on in this industry right now. So it's a good deal.
Absolutely. All right, Chris Neumarker. Well, these are only the top stories of Mass Device.
Yeah.
Folks are missing out on much, much more. Where can they get all the news that's needed to know in MedTech?
For all the news you need to know in MedTech, go to massdevice.com. And I really encourage you sign up for our daily Mass Device Plus 5e newsletter. It's easy to find that on the homepage. Go and subscribe to that. A great way just to get a nice collection of top news in your inbox. So, Tom, it's been awesome as always. And we'll be back next week to do a really good roundup with our colleagues on the top news of the year.
Yeah, we've already recorded that, though. So this is your and mine last recording of 2025. So, Chris Neumarker, thank you for all the laughs this year. In fact, the Riverside platform that we record on, I shared one of the videos on LinkedIn. The word spoken most often was Boston.
Boston. Well, hey, right?
There was actually two videos, and I should share this one with you. It was just, it said, basically, people like to laugh on our show, and there's just a sequence of lots of laughter between us and some of our guests. So thanks for all the laughs, Chris. It's been, we have a lot of fun.
Yeah. No matter what the world throws at you, you just gotta be a happy warrior and, have some good humor, have some fun.
Absolutely. All right, Chris Neumarker. Well, Merry Christmas to your family and Happy New Year. And you and I will record next. We'll talk, of course, before then, but record next in 2026.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Tom. Yeah, we'll be back with all of you in 2026. Take care, everybody.
All right, thanks for those newsmakers, Chris Neumarker, and welcome to Device Talks Weekly, Gail Grimes. Now, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Confluent Medical.
I'm here with Tom Ditter. He's Senior Director of Product Development at Confluent Medical. Tom, Confluent's made quite a bit of noise in the medical device space this year, specifically surrounding Nitinol, which has been just really an exciting topic of the year and of the past couple of years. Before the company was Confluent, it was known as NDC, which stands for Nitinol Devices and Components. Can you give us a quick overview of how Confluent got to where it is today and how your history is connected to NDC and to Nitinol?
And the philosophy of the founders was to understand the fundamental material science behind Nitinol and to use that to design and process components made from Nitinol. Now, Confluent continues its legacy today throughout its capabilities. It focuses on the material science of not just Nitinol, but also polymers and textiles as well.
That's really interesting. And as a contract manufacturer, your job is to assist OEMs in taking a design from prototype to production. Can you give us some examples of how Confluent accomplished this recently? A few cases you've worked on. I know you have to probably be sparse on details, but what are some of the things you've been working on?
Confluent is fully integrated and has the capability to take a product from prototyping to development, optimization, and full-scale manufacturing. We recently just worked with an OEM on a novel neurovascular stent. We assisted them in initial design iterations, process development, to full-blown manufacturing.
Tom, Confluent Medical is a contract manufacturer, which means you assist OEMs in taking design from prototype to production. Can you give us an example of how Confluent has recently accomplished this?
Yeah, yes, as you mentioned, Confluent is fully integrated. We do have the capability to take a product from initial prototyping to full-scale manufacturing. We recently accomplished this with a OEM that was working on a novel neurovascular stent. We worked with them on the initial design iterations, took it to process development optimization, and finally to full-scale manufacturing.
I will pick up this conversation a little later in the podcast. If you want to find out more information about Confluent right now, though, go to its website, confluentmedical.com. That's confluentmedical.com. Or, if it's easier, go to nightinol.com. Now we're going to begin exploring the Hugo RAS system. Of course, Medtronic got FDA approval, as we talked about today and a couple of episodes ago on the podcast. Chris and I decided to break up this news in two ways. He'll open up with a conversation with Dr. James Porter, who's the Chief Medical Officer for Robotic Surgical Technologies and Digital Technologies at Medtronic. And then a little later, immediately after that, in fact, I will speak with Rajit Kamal. He is the Vice President and GM for Robotic Surgical Technologies at Medtronic. So we've got to know Rajit very well over the last few years. He was kind enough to speak at our Device Talks Boston event, so it's great to reconnect with him. But first, let's hear Chris Neumacher's conversation with James Porter. Again, Dr. James Porter, the Chief Medical Officer of Robotic Surgical Technologies and Digital Technologies at Medtronic.
Hi there. This is Chris Neumacher, Mass Device Editor-in-Chief. We're talking December, and this month, Medtronic achieved a significant regulatory milestone. After about a decade of effort, Medtronic achieved FDA clearance of Hugo for its first indication in the United States. And to talk more about Medtronic's journey with Hugo, I'm fortunate enough to have here Dr. James Porter, the Chief Medical Officer of Surgical Robotics at Medtronic. Dr. Porter, welcome to Device Talks Weekly.
Thank you, Chris. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic. Just looking at your history, most of your career, you were a surgeon. You've been a surgeon. You've been a doctor. Tell me a little bit how you ended up, going, from, being a medical practitioner to, moving now into working for, the world's largest medical device company. With Hugo, how'd you get here?
Well, long journey, but it's all been technology focused for the most part. So I started with open surgery. This is about 30 years ago. So I've been in practice about 30 years. And then laparoscopy came to the forefront in urology in the 90s. I actually did a fellowship in Europe in laparoscopy. So I learned that technology. And then robotics in the early 2000s. So I was one of the early adopters of robotics. I've done over 5,000 robotic surgeries with the current robot and have been very interested in technology and improving technology from the very beginning. And what the robot and technology has allowed me to do is surgery with much less impact to the patient. So that's why I think we're seeing this growth in robotics.
Yeah, absolutely. When did you first meet Hugo? What was that like?
Yeah, I met Hugo in 2020 for the first time and saw really great promise and potential, and started working with Medtronic as an advisor, and then formally came on board as Chief Medical Officer last year. I'm still, incidentally, still practicing, so I'm not completely out of surgery. I'm still practicing surgery, doing robotics, so I keep my hand still involved in the clinical side, but now helping Medtronic move Hugo forward.
It's fantastic. What was your first reaction about Hugo? I suspect your experience up to that point had been with Da Vinci robots. That's kind of Intuitive has just really dominated that space for decades. They pioneered it, starting in the 1990s. But what struck you about Hugo when you first started working with a Hugo system?
Yeah, the the form was different. It was very different. It was not a boom robot. It was a modular robot. And so each one of the arm carts controls an arm. So it's a little more variability, a little more flexibility, allows you to access the abdomen. So I was really excited about improved access with the modular robot. I also liked the console, the open console. And the console was very different than the immersive Da Vinci console, and could really see the benefit of being able to actually communicate with the team, see what's happening at the bedside. I wasn't in my own little world in the immersive console. And I also really, really liked the position that I could assume with the open console. With the immersive console, you're forward, you've got most of your head weight forward.
Yeah.
And for me, that created a lot of problems. In fact, personally, after doing 5,000 operations, I was experiencing problems with that position. Ended up having neck surgery on my neck in 2022,
Wow.
and position. And now there's a growing literature on surgeons who are experiencing neck and back problems from that immersive forward position.
How does Hugo achieve you being able to have that open console? Because I mean, I suspect the immersive idea is like it allows you just to be like right in there seeing, seeing exactly what you're doing laparoscopically with those tools, right? So how does Hugo, I guess kind of get around that and kind of achieve you being able to have this open view?
Yeah. So not unlike looking at your computer screen, you can see things on your computer screen, and that's what Hugo looks like. It's a computer screen, but you wear 3D glasses to give you depth. Obviously, when you're looking at a computer screen, you're looking at things in 2D. For
Yeah.
surgery, for robotic surgery, you need 3D. And so Hugo has 3D glasses, which allow you to look at the screen. But because you're not looking into a viewfinder, you can stay upright. You can support the weight of your head over your body, and of course, and then you get rid of all those neck and back issues.
So yeah, that's great. So I mean, it's basically it's good news that you don't get to like interact as much with people on the orthopedic side of your profession, like by using
Right.
a Hugo console more. So I mean,
Yeah.
what kind of, as you start working more with Medtronic and then eventually like actually working with them, working for them, I mean, how are you, what kind of insights were you able to provide, Medtronic, to further improve Hugo? To I mean, because I mean, I see that a lot in med tech product development, that you have like engineers and technologists who have like these like really neat ideas, but it's another thing to have all this innovation and whatnot and like figure out how to like properly apply it to what physicians actually need in the healthcare setting. I mean, what how are you able to help Medtronic in that regard?
Yeah, so the way I was able to help is I was an experienced robotic surgeon, which allowed me to provide insights about robotics over time. And so that's a little different perspective. It's important to understand, though, that from the inception of Hugo, from the very beginning, from the very design,
Yeah.
clinicians were involved in the development. They were involved in giving advice. They're developed in identifying what the use cases were. And so this was the evolution of Hugo. What I allowed then was a more mature perspective on where robotics is in 2024 and what we need to do to be competitive in a market where a robot's been in place for 25 years.
Right. I mean, I guess that is, I mean, how, I mean, from that health provider standpoint, how does Medtronic, how can it be, competitive in that market? Because, like Intuitive obviously has, very established relationships at like hospitals across the United States. I mean, what, where do you see, Hugo, competing now in the United States?
Well, I see Hugo competing everywhere where soft tissue robots is being performed.
Yeah.
Hugo has the capability and, like I said, the access. So this modular platform
Right.
allows surgeons to cover a larger area. And if you don't need to cover a larger area, it's versatile. So you don't need all the arms. Let's say you're just doing a surgery in one area, like a hernia or a prostatectomy. You don't necessarily need to have all the arms. You can limit that. So you're not bound by the constriction of a boom robot. You can do anything you'd like with Hugo. So I think that's what's going to make it competitive. It's a different form. I think surgeons are going to see this, and they're going to see possibilities that they couldn't do currently with the boom robot.
Wow. So it sounds like there could be, I mean, how much potential could there be to get Hugo's in the ambulatory surgery centers? Because that just doesn't seem like a place where you could have like this giant Da Vinci robot with arms would be like in the ambulatory surgery center space.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right on. I think these are smaller arms. They are mobile. Surgery centers are smaller. You want to be able to use those rooms for other things. So having a room that's kind of dominated by a big room, big boom robot is going to be much, it's going to be much better for an ambulatory surgery center to be able to move these arms in and out. So yeah, I think this is an area that we're definitely looking at.
I mean, just looking at this whole development process, I mean, what were like kind of the major challenges that Medtronic had to achieve technologically to get here?
Yeah. Well, robotics is complicated. It's not easy. I mean, if it was simple, there would be 10 robots, and there's not.
Right.
But moving in space, being able to manipulate tissue in space is a challenge. And there's a lot of engineering that goes into these arms that figures out how these arms need to be positioned and then how they move when you're inside the abdomen. So just the sheer simple task of moving tissue in space was the big hurdle. And I think once you figure that out, then you can start adding on more and more features. And that's kind of been the evolution of Hugo.
And how did Medtronic decide what to include and what not to include? Like putting together. I mean, for example, you were saying like how the immersive headset was something that Intuitive's had with Da Vinci's, and you were like, no, we can we're fine. A screen with 3D glasses will work great. I mean, what were some of the other major decisions made along the way?
Well, yeah, I think because there was a robot available, I think they started questioning, could we make it better from the very beginning? Could we
Yeah.
make it different? Could we make it something that would appeal to maybe a different type of procedure? And so, if you're going to go out there and compete, if you bring in the same tool, that's going to be harder. But bring in a differentiated platform, and then I think it makes competition better and makes it easier. So I think those were some of the decisions. Could we make the current robot smaller? Could we make the console better for surgeons? Because I think, again, they went to surgeons, they asked them, what do you like about the immersive console? What don't you like about the immersive
Right.
console? These were the decisions that they made based on the voice of the surgeons. And I think that's what's driven their platform and their innovation from the very beginning.
And you think health per like from a health provider perspective, like this having the arms like you could like position them in all kinds of different ways, does that does not having it so that isn't like a hurdle for a health provider, that's like one more complication for them that's actually a benefit.
Yeah, it's a benefit. I think obviously, you have to become familiar with the technology in order to apply it. But there's obviously training that is very straightforward. And once you learn the differences, then the application is very straightforward.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, okay, so, like, I use a Mac. Like I've used a Mac for decades. If I at this point, if I go onto a Windows computer, Chris, go over here and try to do something on this for us really quick. Like I'm like, oh, it's something completely different for me. I mean, how do you ensure that somebody, a surgeon who's very used to using a Da Vinci, doesn't have that effect as they go over to a Hugo? I mean, how do you ease the transition for them so they aren't like, you're moving me from Apple to Windows, or maybe you'd like it better if it's going to Hugo is moving from Windows to Apple. But I mean, what, I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I like your analogy. I think there's something there. So
Yeah.
if you're on a Mac and you want to write a document, you're in Word and you're doing it. Well, there's Word for PCs as well, right? So the end product is the same. What's the end product for robotics? Doing robotic surgery. So
Yeah.
right now, we have robotic surgeons all over the world that know how to do robotic surgery. What we then do is train them how to use Hugo for that same application. So they're not learning everything new. They're
Yeah.
learning how to take a different tool and do the same operation. That's exactly all they're learning. That's it. It's that simple.
That's great. And okay, so and then and so Intuitive kind of like upped the ante last year, like saying, hey, now with our new generation, we've got force feedback. I mean, is that necessary? I mean, because I mean, Hugo doesn't have that at this point,
right.
But I mean, how necessary is that really to the surgeon community at this point?
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying this because Hugo doesn't have it, but there's been 14 million surgeries done with Da Vinci without force feedback, and they've been done safely.
Yeah.
So I wondered about, you know, what is force feedback going to bring to us? You know, there are haptics in robotics. They're not tactile haptics, but they're visual haptics. And so surgeons over time learn the tissue clues that tell you what you're doing to tissue, how hard you're pushing, is tissue firm, is it soft? These are all things that you gain over time. So personally, I don't see the benefit of haptics as yet, but we're early in a technology, and I never say never about a technology until we really see where it goes. So I think that's where haptics is right now.
Yeah. And so, you know, the first indication, you know, urologic, why, you know, why urology? Why was the decision to seek that as the first indication for Hugo?
Yeah. I think it's because urology really was the starting point for robotics. And I think Medtronic felt like, you know, we needed to, you know, try this with the surgeons who have the most experience. We wanted the combination of our robot, their experience, to show that Hugo can be used. It can be used safely. It can be used effectively. So I think that's why we start with the most experienced group of surgeons, the urologists.
As you were getting into that process with FDA, I mean, any like requests from FDA that, you know, were anything, any kind of insights on like requests from FDA that might have been a little more, you know, unique or, you know, like, oh, they're interested in, you know, I mean, what were some of the major things you had to prove around it, you know, to get to this point?
Right. Well, I think the Euro trial we did, urology trial, 137 patients and three different procedures. What the FDA asked us to prove, like they do with any device, is it safe? Is it effective? So those were our endpoints, and we showed the FDA that Hugo was both safe and effective in those patients. And you know, so it was a standard ask. It was a
it's
lot of work.
Straightforward.
Yep. It was a lot of work to get to that ask, but
oh, yeah.
We did it, and we're very proud of where we are right now.
What's next? I mean, we recently wrote about you, you know, seeking an indication for you know, hysterectomies, or at least you're starting the clinical trial work on that. I mean, you know, where would you like to see, you know, Hugo branch next?
Yeah, so we've already completed another FDA trial for hernia, so that's 193 procedures in hernia, both incisional and ventral, ventral and inguinal hernia. And very, very good effectiveness and safety in that trial. That data is currently being reviewed by the FDA. As you mentioned, we are in the middle of our GYN trial, and we're accruing patients, and we're seeing great results, great outcomes early on. And so the next is expanding our indications, expanding Hugo to other specialties beyond general surgery and GYN, and continuing to see how Hugo can be applied.
I thought you alluded to this a bit when you were kind of talking about the open design and how the arms move around, but I mean, I kind of heard you saying that you earlier on that you saw, you know, Hugo potentially going into, you know, areas of surgery the robotic surgery hasn't, you know, been in before that much. I mean, where any kind of clues on where that might be, like where it could go that could be, you know, pretty exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we're starting to see, you know, especially outside the United States, you know, there's a broad experience of Hugo surgery outside the United States. And we've actually seen Hugo being applied quite differently, to be honest, in very exciting ways. So, you know, I would say most all surgeries have been attempted robotically, but there's been limitations. And what we're seeing are the ability to address those limitations. And it has to do with really being able to cover a much larger area in the abdomen than you can with a standard boom robot, because you're not constrained by accessing the patient from one point. So what we're seeing outside the United States, in Japan, in Western Europe, are surgeons putting Hugo in some very, very unique configurations that are actually taking those robotic procedures, facilitating them, making them better, and allowing them to do a more complete operation than they could with the standard robot.
Wow. So, I mean, any examples? I mean, what's like a procedure that you were just like, wow, sure. That's amazing they're doing it this way. Like,
yeah. So removing the colon. So for example, if you have to remove the left colon, you start up way in the top of the abdomen and you have to go all the way down into the pelvis. So that's covering the entire abdomen. That's extremely hard for the current robot to reach. But with Hugo, you can place the arms in different configurations and you can actually reach this area. So what we're seeing in colorectal surgery in particular is really an improvement in how they're doing it, decreasing the operative time, and really gaining better access to the entire abdomen.
Wow. And like as an open surgery, this would just be a hugely invasive.
A big incision to do this.
Yeah.
And it's done open, but it's a big incision and it's a lot more recovery for the patient. And so obviously the benefit of robotics is smaller incisions, faster healing, and better recovery.
So there's just like some really hard to reach places that a boom robot just, it would be a lot harder to get to. And you're seeing experimentation over in Europe, Japan, where they're like putting arms in configurations that are unique to like get this done.
Yep. That's exactly what we're seeing. You can reach it with a boom robot, but you have to put additional port in usually and move the robot and do what's called redocking. With Hugo, you put it in the first time, ports are in place, no redocking, access the entire abdomen from the initial port configuration.
That's fantastic. I mean, what? I mean, at this point, like everything that you're seeing that's possible with surgical robotics, I mean, how would you, I mean, it's part of this whole, I mean, we hear the term minimally invasive surgery a lot. I mean, how would you define minimally invasive surgery at this point?
Yeah. Minimally invasive surgery is being able to access and perform, you know, the same operations you would do open, but they're doing it through smaller incisions. So that's less impact to the patient. And it's not just the incisions, but every time you make a big incision, you have to see. And so that usually involves putting what's called a retractor device in place. That retractor puts tension, pressure on the abdominal wall. There's, you know, that creates pain. So because you have a scope in place, you can see. Because you have other instruments in place, you can manipulate tissue. So doing the same surgery, but doing it through smaller access. So minimally invasive surgery.
Is there anything, any type of surgery that you think will never be done minimally invasively that will always be open? Everything possible? Is everything?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is the things that we didn't think possible are now being attempted and done in many cases successfully. And a lot of that has to do with just expanding what the robot can do. And so what we're seeing is newer instrumentation applied to robots to allow surgeons to do more and more procedures that we couldn't imagine they could do in the past.
What kind of enabling technologies would you love to see to like get this advanced even more?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that we currently have with Hugo, which I think is really improving what we do, is our digital platform, our digital ecosystem called Touch Surgery. And Touch Surgery allows surgeons to gain information about the operation, to understand what they're doing. It also allows us to put in advanced imaging on the platform, so they have access to that during the operation. So 3D models gives surgeons better access, also allows surgeons to communicate with each other. So we have a telementoring platform which allows two-way audio video communication called Livestream, allows surgeons to communicate, to collaborate, to exchange ideas, and so you can advance surgery in that regard. So our digital ecosystem is a very, I would say, mature offering that really, I think, sets Hugo apart from other robots.
Yeah, I know one of our Device Talks Boston show, one of our recent ones, my colleague Tom Salemi used the collaboration software on Hugo in front of an audience to help talk through the operation of a red bell pepper. So that was in London, like from Boston. So I mean, that's I mean, so if you get that collaboration, and then, we're hearing more about telerobotics. From your standpoint, how doable is that in the future too? That we could have, some, perhaps like a surgeon even using a Hugo to operate, on somebody like in another location.
So a proof of concept has happened. It's already been proven. We're seeing examples, all over the world now, and we're seeing surgeons operate on patients, transcontinentally, transglobally across oceans. We've seen incredible improvements in transmission speeds because this is really obviously you need to have a signal which is in line or in tune with what you're doing in real time. You can't have a huge lag or delay. So, that problem has been essentially addressed. It's now just a matter of figuring out how to do this safely, how to make sure that we're not putting patients at risk who are undergoing telesurgery. And then I think, there's a lot of effort right now to make sure that we have, good regulatory view on what's happening with telesurgery. And I think Medtronic is involved in this process. I know I've been talking to groups about how we can move this forward.
And kind of the exciting idea is that you could have a surgeon who has a rare expertise who could jump in somewhere else in the world and and assist with a surgery.
I think that's going to be the first use case, actually. Probably not a surgeon operating on somebody it just because it's been demonstrated, but could I help somebody? Could I, somebody's in a doing the surgery, in a place where they're present with the patient. Could I help them get through a problem, or could I use my expertise to help somebody move things forward? We've already done that. We've been doing that, and that we think is going to continue to be an important part of telesurgery.
Fantastic. What's next? I mean, what has you excited for the future?
What's next is smaller robots, robots that actually enter the body through natural orifice, robots that have multiple arms going through a single incision to make it even more minimally invasive. So instead of having four or five incisions, you now have one incision. There are many, many robots that we're working on at Medtronic that are going to give us capability that we just currently don't have.
Fantastic. Is there anything I didn't ask that I should have asked? I feel like we covered a lot of really great ground here today.
Well, I mean, why, the reason I joined Medtronic was I felt we needed another choice. And I think that's what Hugo's going to bring to not only to the surgeons in the US, but what it's already been brought to surgeons outside the United States. Choice, drives competition, and competition drives innovation. So we are looking to improve robotics for patients by providing choice for our surgeons and our patients, and then improving robotics overall because of that.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Porter, it was a real pleasure. Thanks for coming on Device Talks Weekly.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Great job, Chris Neumacher. Thanks, Dr. Porter, for joining us. We will begin this or continue this conversation about Hugo Rass in just a little bit. But first, I'd like to bring back my conversation with our sponsor, Confluent Medical.
I'm here with Tom Ditter. He is Senior Director of Product Development at Confluent Medical. Tom, Nitinol is growing in popularity. We're seeing more and more OEMs are turning to it. This alloy has shape memory. It has super elastic properties. Can you explain how Confluent sets itself apart from other Nitinol suppliers?
Well, Confluent has over 30 years of experience in the design and processing of Nitinol. But beyond that expertise, Confluent identified a Nitinol supply chain gap. They invested over $100 million across the supply chain. Most recently, they just made an investment of over $50 million in additional melt and conversion capacity, becoming the fulfillment partner for one of the largest melt suppliers in the industry.
So, Tom, we're hearing so much about Nitinol's super elastic and shape memory properties. It makes it an ideal alloy, specifically within the neurovascular space. Can you speak to how Confluent's expertise is able to meet the growing demands for OEMs in the neurovascular market?
Yes, for neurovascular applications, durability is a major consideration, and Confluent Medical has invested heavily in the development and processing of high-purity alloys for increased durability and fatigue resistance. Our material SE508 ELI is one of the highest purity materials available and ideal for high cycle fatigue applications, as found in neurovascular devices. Additionally, Confluent specializes in high precision polymer tubing, such as FilmCast PTFE. This makes us unique in the neurovascular space in that we can offer PTFE with thinner walls and larger diameters, making it ideal for large diameter aspiration catheters.
So, Tom, that's super interesting about the neurovascular space. So what does the future look like for Nitinol in the neurovascular device market?
The demand for minimally invasive procedures is growing, so we can expect to see Nitinol as a key alloy for these devices. Future applications such as neurovascular devices will need to have a smaller profile with an emphasis on durability. Additionally, high purity Nitinol is needed to address high fatigue applications to prevent fracture and improve longevity for patients.
Well, this has been really entertaining and insightful, Tom. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be with you.
And thanks again to Confluent Medical for sponsoring this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. For more information, go to its website, confluentmedical.com or nitinol.com. Confluent Medical is C-O-N-F-L-U-E-N-T medical.com. And I hope you know how to spell Nitinol, N-I-T-I-N-O-L.com. All right, now let's continue our conversation about FDA's approval of Hugo RAS. Once again, our next guest is Rajit Kamal, the Vice President and General Manager of Robotic Surgical Technologies at Medtronic. He and I have talked on a few occasions, and as I mentioned up top, he was a guest of ours at Device Talks Weekly, Device Talks Boston, rather, last year. In 2024, he gave a great keynote conversation. We'll reference that, and he let me perform remote surgery on a red pepper that was in England. It was I didn't get to operate the robotic arm, but I was more of a proctor, a consulting physician. So it was great fun and a great story, and they allowed us to tour the Medtronic Robotics site nearby. So it was a great experience overall. So really happy to bring you this conversation with Rajit Kamal, Vice President and General Manager, Robotic Surgical Technologies at Medtronic. Well, Rajit Kamal, welcome to the podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, actually.
It's great to be with you, Tom. Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. Now, we had you on a few years ago, and we'll put a link into that. That gave your entry into MedTech, but we have too much great news to talk about to focus on that here and now. You are, I think, probably next to Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, probably one of the more scrutinized leaders in the Boston area in terms of overseeing the Hugo project at Medtronic, and scrutinized in a good way. I think people have a lot of great anticipation. And a lot of new players in surgical robotics. I think we were all sort of watching and waiting and waiting for this this race to unfold. I don't feel like as an insider, you probably have that same sense that we have from the outside. But I do wonder, though, what has the last couple of years been like for you? Am I fair in my assessment, my joking assessment, that you were on a bit of a hot seat's not right, but a closely watched seat, we'll say that.
Yeah. You know, Tom, I always say it's a privilege to be in the position that we are, that I am in and that that team is in, right? Mm-hmm. We are playing a very important role in shaping the future of surgery, but also a very important role in bringing choice to our customers. And, you know, for us, everything starts with what value can we add to our customers? And, you know, obviously Medtronic has been on this much longer. I have been part of this journey for the last 3 years, Tom. Mm-hmm. But what really drives us is how do we bring choice? How do we bring technology that creates value for our customers? And that is the spirit with which we have approached this. As you know very well, this has not been an easy journey. Mm-hmm. And it won't be an easy journey for anybody that gets into soft tissue robotics, right? And the North Star always has to be, what impact will we make on our customers? What impact will we make on our patients? And obviously, we are approaching this FDA given that we have been in the market outside the US and we know what value we have been able to bring to our customers. So that has been exciting. But I always say, I don't mind the scrutiny. I don't mind the spotlight. I don't mind the stress because I think it's a position that we are very grateful to be in, to be able to play a role in shaping the future of surgery and bringing much needed choice to our customers in the US.
That's great. I want to dig deeper into the FDA approval for urological procedures for Hugo, but if you wouldn't mind, just one more sort of inside baseball question. I mean, how over the past couple of years have you sort of kept, how has the team kept motivated? I mean, how do you keep moving forward? You did have approval in Europe, so you're getting some experience on the commercial front. but what have been the last 2 years like? Just making sure everyone's just moving forward and keeping their eye on the prize and not getting caught up in all the knucklehead stuff that people like me talk about, but really focusing on making sure that you're able to give this choice to your customers and to the healthcare systems.
You know, as I said, it first starts with the North Star always has to be what value will you bring to our customers, yeah, right? And that has been our guiding principle. Tom, we are available in 37 countries around the world, right? So we have engaged with our customers. We do user groups to understand their feedback. And that has been encouraging and motivating for the team as well. You know, we have seen things that we worked on resonate with our customers. There have been also very important lessons learned. Even in the U.S., Tom, so look, we have done now tens of thousands of procedures outside the U.S. across urology, gynecology, general surgery. But even in the U.S., as a part of our clinical trial, we have now done over 350 procedures, probably, I would say, more than any other robotic system except always Da Vinci system.
Mm-hmm.
But we have done over 350 procedures across urology, which was our submission for the FDA clearance. But we have done procedures, over 192 procedures in hernia. We have publicly announced we have started doing procedures for gynecology. So U.S. is not completely new to us. We have a foundation to build on, right?
Good point.
Over 350 cases, 10 leading hospitals. We have always, you know, this journey is never easy. There are ups and downs. But again, always comes down to, and for us, we have seen the value, the feedback we got from customers outside the U.S. And I think that was the motivating factor to keep focused here. Anybody in the industry, I think if that's what you're referring to, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my advice to them would be, number one, it's important. It's much needed. We need to bring choices to our customers. But the second thing I would say is we all need to buckle up. This is this is not an easy ride. This is a tough ride, but a rewarding. Once you get to those milestones, it is quite rewarding.
That's amazing. And lastly, obviously, as you mentioned, you've put the work in, got the procedures done, got the data in the FDA. You never know, though, when and if that approval is coming forward. What was your feeling right at the moment where you found out that FDA approval was given?
It was. We were very, very excited.
Yeah.
I think you know, this is a long due. We have worked very hard on it, right? Not only developing the product, doing the clinical trials. I mean, as you know, Tom, you know the medtech industry very well. Not many products require clinical trial, right? Mm-hmm. Most of our products are, you know, you do without clinical, but this one did. And, you know, we are proud of the clinical trials we have done. I think probably one of the largest clinical trials we have done in the U.S. to bring in a soft tissue robotics market. So a lot of hard work had gone in. The team was very excited, very, very excited because it validated the efforts we have put in. It's always good to get that nod of approval from the FDA. All the hard work. I'm so proud of the Medtronic team, Tom. I have seen how hard people have worked day in and day out, you know, with the focus of making sure that we are able to bring this technology to the U.S. market. So very proud of the team. Just validates the effort that has gone in, but also excited about what is to come.
Mm-hmm.
Also excited about now, finally, if you think about any surgeon, Tom, or any hospital, they do procedures, open, lab, and robotic, right? Now, and we have been doing this outside the U.S., when we go to a hospital or a customer, we can say, look, we want to partner with you on surgery, not just robotic surgery, on surgery. And we can provide you portfolio, support, education, you name it. We can provide you everything across your surgical practice. And let's talk about how do we partner there. And today we are the only company that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are really excited about driving that dialogue with our customers in the U.S. So feeling of excitement, feeling of achievement, but also excited about, you know, what we can do in the market now.
Yeah. And I'm going to be a nerd about this, but how did you find out? Is it an email? Did someone give you a phone call? And you don't have to give me details, but like what was the physical way you've received that information?
So for the way it works, Tom, is our regulatory team submits to the FDA. So they get an email from the FDA. The moment they got the email, I got the phone call from my regulatory partner saying, and our, you know, we have a model where we have a core team leader who leads the project. So the moment that email came, so we knew when the date, we knew when the email is going to come.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I was looking at my phone many times that day, waiting for that phone call, because that was our plan, that whenever we get the email from the FDA, they will call me. I mean, you know, just to share with you, I was traveling that day and I had boarded the flight And my flight was actually on the runway about to take off, and I saw the phone call. So I knew what this phone call was about, and I did pick up that phone, and I did get a stare from the air hostess there, right? But yeah, that's how it worked. And it was a very, very exciting moment for me and for the Medtronic team.
That's some great color. Thanks so much. I would have taken the phone call as well. I'm sure anyone listening would have. So all right. So the work begins. The hard work begins now. Let's, as you mentioned, you've had experience in over 3 dozen countries across the world. You've been selling this device for a time. Help me, if you would, unpack the commercialization strategy in the U.S. What have you developed so far? What is step number one for making Hugo available to your customers?
Yeah, as we bring Hugo to the U.S. market, we definitely have the advantage of, you know, looking at the learnings we have. So as I said, we are available now in 37 countries around the world, Tom. We have done tens of thousands of procedures across urology, gynecology, general surgery, you know, hundreds of customers who are using Hugo. So we have lessons learned, and I will share, you know, what are some of the lessons learned. As we approach the U.S. market, we are going to be very thoughtful. We are going to be, we are calling it what we call as a purposeful launch. We want to make sure that we walk slow before we run. We want to make sure that, you know, we drive customer experience. That is our number one priority. How do we make sure we optimize the customers who choose to partner with us as we start our journey in the U.S.? But the lessons learned are important, Tom. And, you know, as you know, I have been in this role for just coming up on 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great, great journey. What we have learned are a couple of things. The first thing what we have learned is when customers are buying a robotic system, they're not comparing a robot A with robot B. They are comparing a partnership. You know, Tom, this is not a transactional. I mean, you know my background. I have led implant businesses where customers can use one implant today. If they like it, they continue. If they don't like it, they can switch to another implant tomorrow, right? And that is not the case with when you buy a robot. It's a huge investment financially, time commitment. You are talking about not just the surgeon, you're talking about the OR staff, the hospital goes through a journey. So when customers buy something like this, they are looking for what we call as a partnership. And that is where I think what we bring to the table has differentiated. And what we bring to the table, I always say there are five things that resonates with the customers. One, Tom, is our system. So as you know, Hugo has a different form factor than the market leader. We have a modular design versus a boom, and modularity has benefits. It provides flexibility of port placements. We have seen that play out in general surgery type procedures, which is truly a multi-quadrant procedure. It also makes your transition easier. If you're a lap surgeon, Tom, you don't have to change your surgical technique. You can keep the same port placements as you transition to robotics, and we have seen that. It's also easier to get in and out. It has practical, clinical, economical benefits. So we see that with modularity. We have an open console that enables better communication, coordination with the OR staff. So our form factor has resonated, and obviously that will be part of our messaging as we bring to the U.S. market. The second is our advanced instruments. Customers want to use our trusted devices, our LigaSure, which is used in 35 million procedures. So that's the second thing we bring, is clinically proven advanced instruments. And LigaSure is available on Hugo. Outside the U.S., we will work with the FDA to get that onto the Hugo system in the U.S. Third is our digital. I mean, as you know, there's so much technology digital happening. Our Hugo system comes with our touch surgery offerings of DS1, LiveStream. That's part of the package. And our DS1 system is very differentiated. Our LiveStream technology, you actually did a peparectomy with our LiveStream technology, right, Tom? So if you remember, about 2 years back, right?
At Device Talks last year, 2024.
And that has gone very well. That's really, in terms of, you know, teleproctoring, in terms of telementoring, that technology has done well. That comes standard with our Hugo platform. The fourth pillar, what we bring, Tom, is, and something we have learned, is education is very important. Customer training is extremely important. When you ask a customer who is transitioning to a robotic system, you know, what are the top unmet needs, where you need the most support, education is usually one or two, right? So we have invested a lot in what we call is a proficiency-based progression training. We have developed that training methodology. We have partnered with ORC Academy in Belgium. This is something we had developed for our system. So there's a technical part of it. There's a procedural part of it. We have a very comprehensive training program that includes simulations, e-learning, cadaver training. We also provide proctor support. So everybody who starts on Hugo gets an in-person proctor for their first case. We also provide a person from Medtronic who works with the OR staff, with the surgeons to guide them through that journey. And that has resonated very well, that partnership approach. And the last thing I would say is if you're a hospital executive, you know, we can sit with you and contract across our portfolio. It is not just about robotics. You know, Medtronic has surgical breadth of the portfolio, but also beyond that as well. And that has resonated very well, Tom. And I think more so it will resonate in the US, just given we have big IDNs, more private systems. So those are the few areas that has resonated very well. And we are looking forward to bringing all those to the customers in the US. So we are excited about that.
That's great. So how unique is this commercial launch compared to other devices? You mentioned the incumbent Intuitive has been in place and entrenched and has a considerable head start in terms of calendar years. But of course, Medtronic has a great hold on the surgical market. So you've already got the relationship. You've got the branding. I mean, when I'm buying a bathroom scale, I'm looking at the names on there. Like, I want to know, like, oh, I know this company. I know that name. So you've got sort of a leg in already. So what does this feel like to you? Is this a brand new commercial launch of a new type of business? Or do you feel like you're almost just providing a new tool to already established medtech surgery customers?
I think it's both, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about robotics, in the US you have decent penetration, much higher than any other countries around the world. So there are customers who have been using robotics and we are providing them choice. And there are many hospitals outside the US where customers have both the systems and they go back and forth between the Intuitive system and our system or other systems. There are many systems now available outside the US. But there are also customers one of the challenges in the US, when you talk to customers, is they say they need more access. Mm-hmm. They need more console time. And I think that's another area where we can come in and provide more access to customers who want to do more procedures robotically. And robotic surgeries are growing exponentially. It has significant value proposition, Tom. I think you and I have talked about, I think I had shared my background, Tom. My mom was a surgeon. So in many ways, throughout my life, I have had a front row seat to surgery and how surgery has evolved from open to lap to robotics. And robotic surgery has such a strong value proposition. And that's why it is seeing adoption. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, every surgeon I have spoken with, they want to do more than they are able to. So I think we are able to provide that access. But the last thing I would say, Tom, is we are Medtronic. We are the largest medtech company, but that's not how we are approaching this launch. Hmm. We are approaching this launch as a startup. Mm-hmm. We are approaching this launch with a lot of humility. Mm-hmm. This is not easy, right? We have formidable competitors. This is a tough market landscape. So we are going to build on our strengths, but we are going to approach this with a mindset of humility, mindset of startup, mindset of making sure that we are really bringing our strengths, partnering with our customers. And so that's how we are approaching this, Tom. Yeah.
So, and that's a great point. We talked about one player in the space, but there's many more coming up, including one that I think their product is maybe a similar design to yours, and they just applied for FDA approval for urological use. So you don't see this as a one or two or three competitive market. You see this as you versus potentially multiple other players in the space.
At least in the short term. And this is, you know, this is not unlike any other industry, Tom, right? So if you take a macro level view, any industry that is growing fast is sizable. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar segment growing at 15%. There are over 15%. There are not many segments in medtech that are that big and growing that fast, right? Which means there's opportunity, which means it will attract many players, which is what we are seeing, right? Mm-hmm. We have, I think, over 50 companies getting into this space. And then what will happen is as the market evolves, you will start to see consolidation. So next, in the short term, I would say next 5 years, you will see multiple players coming in, trying to approach this from different angles, which is how it should be, right? Whether it is focused on site of care, focused on specialty, focused on digital, you know, people will bring different value proposition to, you know, establish their beachhead in this industry. But I do think over the long term, we will start to see consolidation and mm-hmm. we'll start to see fewer players. And I don't know if that number is 3 or 5, but that's how most industries, if you study any industry, in the beginning, many players coming in, then things start to evolve, and then ultimately it's, you know, you get to fewer players who will then become the large players in this space. And we hope to be one of those in the long term.
Final question. Yeah. What does the future look like for Hugo Raz in terms of you've gotten your approval. I'm assuming next you're going to be looking to expand your indications for use of the current system, but future systems is where I'm getting at. What does your pipeline look like? You talked about the great presentation you gave at Device Talks Boston 2024, where you gave our joint keynote, and you allowed me to participate in the procedure of the red pepper that was in England, which was a lot of fun and still talked about. What might we be looking at from Medtronic in a few years? Again, I know it's been a short time since we've got the approval, but we're always interested in what's next here at Device Talks.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Tom, you have the distinction of being the first person to do pepperectomy through our live stream platform. So you are part of our Hugo history,
Tom. I'm honored.
So in the short term, our goal, and we have publicly stated, is to expand indications. So As you know, we have completed our data collection for hernia. We have completed our data collection for general surgery, for gynecology. So you will start to see some of that filing happen. So we are going to, you know, hernia, gynecology are the areas that we will expand our indication. So that will happen. You know, long term, as I said in my talk, there are three pillars on which we are innovating. And, you know, at the right time, we will share how that all comes together. One is automation, and how do we continue to bring automation, whether it is with the product, and how do we think about, you know, this more trend towards making it less invasive, bringing more, smarter tools, right? So we will be looking at all that with our end effectors, with our system. How do we continue to take that to the next level of automation and drive towards less incisions that leads to faster recovery, less blood loss, you know, driven by what benefits the patient. The second thing is about intelligence, Tom. You know, how do we bring AI, how do we bring those insights onto our Hugo platform? In fact, on that talk, I talked about some of the things that we are working on to bring intraoperative intelligence, intraoperative decision-making, and we are working to bring those features onto Hugo through the work we do with our Touch Surgery Enterprise. And third thing is around connectivity. And how do we continue to add? And, you know, when we think about connectivity, we think about this in two ways. How do we connect the data from preoperative to postoperative? And how do we leverage that to provide insights along the care continuum? But also, how do we connect any OR with anybody around the world? We have already started to do that through our live stream platform around telementoring and all that. And we will continue to build on that. So what you will see from us is innovation along those three pillars: automation, intelligence, connectivity. Short term, it's indication expansion, you know, as I said, bringing our LigaSure instrument onto the platform. But longer term, innovating on those three pillars to continue playing our role to drive, as I always say, future of surgery. I always say it's such a privilege. We are so privileged to be part of this team and playing a role in how surgery is going to evolve.
That's wonderful. Yep. And as you said at the top, the med tech is hard, and congratulations to everyone at Medtronic. It's been a long road, but everyone stayed the course, and you've achieved what you set out to do. So that must feel great. I appreciate I know you're starting your day early to hop on the call with us. So I appreciate that bit of hard work, and look forward to catching up with you on a podcast, and maybe at Device Talks Boston this year. That'd be great to see you.
I am looking forward to it, Tom. Always good speaking with you, Tom. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much to Confluent Medical for sponsoring this episode of the Device Talks Weekly podcast. Once again, this is our penultimate episode, the second to last episode of 2025. I'll give the big goodbyes the next episode, but thanks for being part of the Device Talks family. And please subscribe to the Device Talks podcast network so you don't miss a future episode. We'll start rolling out our new products and events in 2026. We had a lot coming your way, and really can't wait to be part of your MedTech story. So thanks for listening to this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.